Love and Autism, written and read by Kay Kerr. The best thing about my first kiss was that it happened in another country. It was simple. I met a boy I thought was cute, and he thought my strangeness was due to my being Australian, which, for reasons I believe were strongly linked to the popularity of Home and Away at the time, led to a brief romantic interlude on a holiday that was otherwise populated entirely by relatives. And then I hopped on a plane, flew 15,000 kilometres home, and never saw him again. The kiss itself, I can't really remember. And prosopagnosia, the inability to recognise faces, means I definitely don't remember his face. But I do recall the aftermath. In a valiant effort to holiday up a trip to visit my grandfather in Ireland after his double bypass heart surgery, my mum took me and my two brothers to London on the way home. We crammed into the one-bedroom apartment of a family friend for a few nights, went to see The Lion King in West End, caught double-decker buses, visited the Weird Wax Museum, ate a lot of McDonald's, and saw the bridges and churches and towers. I was miserable the entire time. In a way, only a 14-year-old on a budget-stretching family holiday of a lifetime could be. I remember moping around the city, lugging my Discman to all the tea towel landmarks, and listening to the CD single of a British pop idol runner-up on repeat. The same song again and again and again. No surprises there. Nothing impressed me. Not the London Eye, not the Pickle Building, and definitely not the guards doing their little march out the front of Buckingham Palace. I returned home changed, matured, and age-appropriately melancholic. No romantic endeavour, successful or otherwise, has ever been that easy again. I understood that first kiss because it involved very little subtext. There was no room for confusion or for mistakes. It was what it was, and there was nothing I could have done that would have led to a different ending. I appreciate it for its clarity, if nothing else. Okay. Now that I've shared a funny anecdote about my first foray into the world of love and romance, let's talk about the other part of this book's title, autism. Autism is an invisible disability with a long and complex history. Parents were once blamed for their children's autism, refrigerator mothers and the like. And so autism was framed as an awful thing that could happen to your child, and it was your fault if it did. Echoes of those attitudes still exist today. You do not have to look far for examples. Suffice to say, that to be autistic is to become well acquainted with deficit. We are identified by deficits, measured on deficits, compared by deficits, and treated for our deficits. Even before I knew I was autistic, I felt those perceived deficits. Diagnosis does not dispel them. If anything, it has the possibility of affirming them, if diagnosis is all you have, without support or community. That is in no small part due to the language and framing of autism itself. It is all laid out in the fifth edition of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, or DSM-5, which is the standard text used to diagnose autism in Australia and many other parts of the world. The criteria demand persistent deficits in social communication and social interaction across multiple contexts. I mean, sure, but by whose standards? What I once accepted as fact, I grow to question more and more. Explorations of love and autism, see what I did there, tend to focus on what the autistic person is lacking and what they must overcome, but that is not what this book is about. This is a closer look at some autistic lives and a celebration of what autistic people bring to their relationships, not despite being autistic, but because of it.